Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news. But stand by now for the worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And I do hope I can pull this off because I've been working job number two today. Yes, Sunday, working job number two. I told you, maybe now that I have two jobs, we're no longer sinks. Single income, numerous kids. We could count the second job as a second income and we could become dinks. Dual income, numerous kids. Although I wasn't too happy with sinks. I wanted to go with winks. One income, numerous kids. But when I wrote it down, I realized it was oinks. And oinks was no good. So anyway, I'm a little bit punchy, folks, so you'll have to bear with me. I want to start with a report from Page Six over at the New York Post. And since this is about a famous Hollywood celebrity, perhaps I should do this in the manner typical of the average entertainment reporter on the local news. Do you have one in your hometown? We have four networks here in Denver, and all of the entertainment reporters would report this story in the same manner, and it would go something like this. Steve Martin is now a father. That's right, the 67-year-old actor and his wife, Anne Stringfield, are new parents. Stringfield, who's only 41, and Mr. Steve Martin welcomed their new addition in December. The famously private Martin and Stringfield were reportedly seen out last week with the baby near their Los Angeles home. It's so exciting. That's on all four networks here in Denver. 67 years old, and he just had a kid in December. Well, where there's life, there's hope, right? All right. So I've got a lot of email this week. Now, typically, I don't do a lot of email on the broadcast because so much of it is just vitriolic hate mail from my enemies and the enemies of all things good and right. But I'm not sure where to start. I think I'll start with this email from my other brother, Daryl, who in listening to the broadcast last week, he wrote to me and he said, Doug, I heard your report about a think tank, and it got me thinking, says Daryl. Question number one, how many thoughts does it take to fill a think tank? Well, Daryl, now I'm just reading Daryl's email for the first time. I'm going to try to answer all of his questions extemporaneously. How many thoughts does it take to fill a think tank? I think there's some variables there, Daryl. If it's a Republican think tank, it depends on what time the strip clubs open. And if it's a Democratic think tank, well, then it depends on what time the bathhouses open. That would be a limiting factor. Doug, question number two. What do you do when a think tank is full? That would depend, Daryl, on what it's full of. I would imagine you have to snake it out, though. That would be my guess. Now, question number three. How can you tell when a think tank is running on empty? Well, that's an easy one, Daryl. When Karl Rove is on their board. Question number four. What happens when a think tank runs out of thoughts? Another easy one, Daryl. They become the National Right to Life Committee. Question number, how many is this? One, two, three, four, five. Question number five. Is a think tank vulnerable to anti-tank weapons? Well, Daryl, I'm not sure, but I think that's an experiment worth trying. Certainly. Doug, is a liberal think tank really any different than a septic tank? Good question, Daryl. And there are good and bad questions in this realm. This is a good question. And I would have to refer you back to Karl Rove and the snake idea. That's probably where we'll have to leave that. Thank you, Doug. Your show is incredible. Your other brother, Daryl. All right. So that's the first one from the mailbag this week. Feel free to email the show. I'm not sure what our email is. It's Doug@theweeklyworldview.com. Doug@theweeklyworldview.com, and you might make it on the air. I have some other stuff from the mailbag that I'm hoping I can fit in. Oh, well, let me go first. Let me get this one out of the way here from Neil in Indianapolis, Indiana. I asked in a recent broadcast what the LGBTQ, remember that? Mm-hmm. College campus group, LGBTQ. What does the Q stand for, I asked. Mm-hmm. And Neil gives us the answer from Indianapolis. He says, Doug, the Q is for questioning. Questioning. I thought it was queer, but it's questioning. And it's actually not very funny because Neil says, Neil says, Doug, this is the pervert's way of recruiting and reproducing and getting 13-year-olds to attend their events. Anyone who tries to protect the kids and stop these molestation opportunities is immediately guilty of discrimination and gender bias. Sincerely, Neil from Indianapolis. Thank you for clearing that up, Neil. You've made me even more uncomfortable about the homosexuals on any given campus in America, but the truth often hurts. Okay, so thank you, Neil. We have a very intelligent audience. Try to fit in as we go through the broadcast. Let's go to the personhood file. This is from worldnetdaily.com. A major New York City hospital has changed its guidelines and implemented new procedures after a nurse sued for forcing her to participate in an abortion in violation of her religious faith. This is Mount Sinai Hospital in New York, the pinnacle of medical research and treatment in America, and they kill babies there too, by the way. I was just reading an article about North Dakota, where the Senate there has passed personhood legislation. It goes to the House now. It will no doubt pass there. And the question will go to the voters in North Dakota in 2014. So reports of the death of the personhood movement have been premature. We are on the march. And I read in the article about North Dakota that there's only one abortion clinic operating in North Dakota. But what we all need to realize is that there's 50 or more OBGYNs and other hospitals in North Dakota that do most of the baby killing. And so even though there's only one abortion clinic, and it looks like the legislature there is well on their way to shutting that thing down, personhood legislation is absolutely necessary to stop the vast majority of the baby killing that's going on at hospitals and OBGYN clinics. Ambulatory surgical centers and things like that. So, let's get back to this story from Mount Sinai. This nurse, she says she was forced to witness the killing of a 22-week-old unborn child by dismemberment. Mount Sinai forced Nurse DiCarlo to watch the doctor remove the bloody arms and legs of the child from its mother's body with forceps. And then after the surgery, she had to view the bloody parts in a specimen cup. And I can't even go on. It's awful. Obama administration attorneys have argued that the government has the right to force business owners to violate their faith and pay for abortifacients. And that's another thing to be addressed and why there's such a need for personhood legislation, because whether it's a surgical or chemical weapons being used against innocent people, the law must be changed, and we've got a long way to go toward changing the hearts of those who would kill innocent children and force us to participate. And congratulations to Nurse DiCarlo, who has at least forced some of the Mount Sinai to stop forcing Christians to kill children. So personhood is on the march. Congratulations in North Dakota. And we hope that as we continue to march, we can change the hearts and minds of those whose hearts have been turned away from their father. All right. Now, on to the politics file. This is from the Associated Press. This is in regards to Obamacare. Citing financial concerns, the Obama administration has begun quietly winding down one of the earliest programs created by Obamacare, a plan that helps people with medical problems who can't get private insurance. Officials, officials, said last week, the pre-existing condition insurance plan will stop taking new applications. Now, enrollment around the country, according to the AP, has been lower than expected, partly because some people could not afford the premiums. Premiums? What do you mean premiums? All of the saps in the Obama phone people, I'm sure they were under the impression that this was all free and that Barry was going to take care of everybody, but it turns out to be grossly expensive. And individual cases have turned out to be costlier than originally projected. Imagine that. Costlier than... Who would have ever saw that coming? Anyway, this program that Barry set up, and Pelosi and all the other communists, the program has spent about $2.5 billion in taxpayer money on medical claims and nearly $180 million on administrative costs. Congress originally allocated $5 billion to the plan. So let's run through the math on this. $2.5 billion they've spent. They had $5 billion. And only $180 million on administrative costs. So that's less than a 10% VIG for the gangsters running the health care program, the national health care program. A 10% VIG, that's considered pretty gracious in Chicago. Quite generous if you were to try to buy a protection policy back there in Chicago, if you know what I mean. And I see there's almost $2.5 billion left in the pot. I'm sure that Barry and his good fellas will make sure that that money goes to the most in need, you know, women, children, minorities, and perhaps some of our brave union brothers, maybe a little bit to take care of Jesse Jackson Jr. in his current unfortunate situation. Glad to see that that money is left over. The AP reports that starting next January, insurance companies will no longer be able to turn anyone away because they're sick or dying. At the same time, the federal government will begin subsidizing coverage for millions of individuals who have no access to employer health care plans. And folks, this is the silver bullet that will collapse the American free enterprise system into the waiting arms of Barry and his progressive ruling class. And this, I believe, will bring great strife and perhaps war, or at least genuine secession. This, Obamacare, this will break America, finally and surely. As I sit before you today, that will happen. And so I guess we've only got about a year. Stock up on beans, bullets, and bandages, ladies and gentlemen. All right. From the Domestic Tranquility File, the Weekly Standard is reporting that the White House... has confirmed, well, we all know now, that Barry Ho and Michelle, his MO, were vacationing in separate locations over this weekend. Barry went down to Florida, and Michelle, she flew out to Colorado with her two daughters to go skiing. And apparently the news media was kept away from Barry, and they're quite upset. I was reading an article just before airtime today, how members of the press were extremely frustrated at the lack of transparency in Barry's golf outing in Florida. I mean, here's a guy who in the middle of the night slipped through the greatest takeover of power and the most destructive legislation in the history of our country, and the news media barely yawned. Now they can't watch him play golf with Tiger Woods' former coach, and everybody's extremely frustrated with the lack of transparency. Anyway, so how many married couples vacation separately? I suppose if you're rich enough that it happens. I just wonder if this is a sign, another sign of trouble in paradise there in the Ho marriage, the Ho MO marriage. Trouble in paradise? Or is it just wildly decadent luxury on the part of people who have never earned a dime in their lives?
I suppose who was Marie Antoinette? She was with, was that Louis the 14th, Louis the 16th, Louis the 14th? They probably vacation separately, whenever at all possible. So anyway, I think it's trouble in paradise. I don't think they're such a happy couple. But that's just me. Now this next story, I'm not going to say that this applies in any way to the whole marriage, but. This is a new term that I've never seen before in the headline from Westward, which is a free pothead magazine here in Colorado. It's about polyamorous families. So those of you who are familiar with Greek and Latin, if you just sit there and think about it in your head for a second, polyamorous. Yeah. So Westward, the first thing, they go three paragraphs in this article. The author humanizes the subjects by relating pithy little anecdotes about each of the three people involved in this particular polyamorous relationship. So now that the homosexuals have pretty much won, what's the next barrier to come down? Apparently it's polyamory, if that's a word. So they have these funny little anecdotes and make these people seem so cute. It's two women and one man, by the way. And they make them sound all wonderful and nice. And then they go on to talk about their perverted criminal three-way relationship. Westward reports that the image of polyamory is changing. And anecdotally, many monogamous couples are changing their relationships to be monogamish. Monogamish instead of monogamous. That's a term created by that sex-addicted homo freak Dan Savage, who also speaks at public government schools. Monogamish is the new term. I've got a quote from one of the perverts involved in this three-way relationship. His name is Reggie, and he says, "Our society is looking for alternative dynamics that work. The days of the traditional nuclear family being the only model are giving way to other options," says Reggie. He says, "I've always felt I had more than enough love to give to more than just one woman." Isn't that convenient for Reggie as he's interviewed by Westward magazine? There's even a website now where you can go and cruise for other polyamorous pervert. I'm not going to give the website's name because, well, frankly, it should be illegal. They should all be arrested. Let's see. We've got... a female pervert, I guess we could call this pervert number two. One of the females being manipulated by Reggie. And she says, "I had always been intrigued by the idea of being polyamorous. I experimented briefly with it during my second marriage, but it wasn't successful. After the divorce," after the divorce, which she insists was not caused by the experiment with polyamory, she says, "I consciously went out to find a polyamorous situation." Well, how hard do you think that is these days, for crying out loud? Westward goes on, "Thanks to television, polyamorous relationships aren't as foreign a concept as they used to be." And that's what really bothers me about television, is slowly but surely they're normalizing everything disgusting. For example, on HGTV, well known here at the McBurney compound as Homo and Gay TV, there's a fine program called Love It or List It. You may or may not be familiar. They tear up and remodel somebody's house while the real estate agent shows the couple another several houses. And then at the end, the couple goes in to see their new remodeled house and they have a choice. Do they love it and stay, or do they list it and move into one of the other houses? It's an entertaining show, harmless and sometimes even uplifting. Last night, as my extremely attractive audio engineer and I are surfing through the channels, we come across Love It or List It, and we sit back and anticipate an hour of harmless entertainment. When what do we see? That's right, 250-something homosexuals. And why is that necessary? Is it so hard to find normal people who want to remodel their house or maybe move? No, it's because HGTV is dedicated, not unlike Westward and other media outlets to normalizing that which is disgusting, perverted, and should be illegal. Pervert number three in this story. She says, the divorce rate is skyrocketing. Monogamy is obviously not working. Okay. Brilliant insight from a completely twisted and perverted deviant who takes one more step along the wide path on the road to hell and to normalizing all which should be abnormal. Put those guitars away. We've got to get back to the broadcast. That was my very first concert, circa 1984. Crocus opening for Sammy Hagar, the Red Rocker, at the, what was the name of that place? Odessa, Texas. I can't remember the name of the venue. But anyway, it was quite exciting. All right, now, so we did the disgusting. Let's do some good news here from Iceland. This is from the Telegraph over in the United Kingdom. The Icelandic government is considering banning pornography. They're considering introducing internet filters to stop Icelanders from downloading or viewing such things on the internet. The Telegraph, here's how the Telegraph reporter puts it. The unprecedented censorship is justified by fears about damaging effects of such things on children and women, period. Doesn't mention men. Apparently, he doesn't get it. Pornography is devastating primarily to men, and it also negatively affects women and children. And that's why it should be criminal and illegal, and those people participating in it, in the trafficking of such things, should be held criminally liable. Well, Iceland's interior minister is drafting legislation to stop the access of online pornographic images and videos by young people through computers, game consoles, and smartphones. So the geniuses in Iceland, they just want to protect the children from pornography. But what they need to understand is that pornography is a major part of what is breaking up the families of the adults, and that negatively affects children far more than what a child might see on the internet, although that's a major problem as well. And again, I refer back to my statement about why pornography should be criminal. This Icelandic interior minister says, we have to be able to discuss a ban on violent pornography, which we all agree has a very harmful effect on young people and can have a clear link to incidents of violent crime. And I don't disagree with that. But if you're going to focus on violent pornography, why not focus on all pornography? Because it's all the same filth, and it all comes from the same pit of hell, and it's all designed to sap the strength of men and destroy a nation by breaking up the families. Let's see. In Iceland, a law forbidding the printing and distribution of pornography is already in force, but it is yet to be updated to cover the internet. So did you know that pornography was illegal in Iceland? I had no idea. And Iceland still goes on day to day. Life continues in Iceland with a ban on pornography, so I'd be all for it here as well. The proposed control over online access that mirrors the attempt in dictatorships such as China to restrict the internet is justified as a defense of vulnerable women and children, according to advocates of the ban. Professor Gail Dines, an expert on pornography, and a I don't know how do you get that title. I guess that means she has cable TV. I don't know. She's an expert, and she speaks. She was a speaker at a recent conference in Reykjavik University. She says, quote, "We are looking at pornography from a new position, from the perspective of the harm it does to the women who appear in it and as a violation of their civil rights." Well, that's pretty clear thinking. I would have to agree with her there. So, you know, the liberals, they're afraid that if you censor anything, that all of America will crumble in on itself and we'll all lose our freedoms and we'll all be enslaved in camps. And it's just not true. You can ban and criminalize that which is criminal and destructive and still have a healthy society that functions and functions even better than before you had to deal with the abscess of criminal pornography being pumped into every house. Well, I hope they do ban it, and I hope they introduce filters, and I hope Iceland serves as a fine example of how we can all move forward and function without all that garbage. All right. Now, an update on the horse meat scandal. I just can't resist this story. Well, since I found out that you had actually eaten horse meat, I'm a bit fascinated by the whole story. Well, officials from the Food Standards Agency in the United Kingdom raided two meat plants last week, and they were probing whether either plant was linked to a 100% horse kebab that had been discovered, and there were burgers, too, that had been discovered at local restaurants. Now, the owner of these two, well, they're basically slaughterhouses. He says he will cooperate with the eight federal Food Standards Agency officers. He says that this wasn't a raid. He said they were welcome to visit here whenever they want. They just wanted to see my records, and I'm showing them my records. He added that he does slaughter horses at his plant and that the meat is sold in the United Kingdom. Well, this has people in the government of Britain absolutely shocked. They say the environment secretary was absolutely shocked when he heard. He said it's totally unacceptable if any business in the UK is defrauding the public by passing off horse meat as beef. I expect the full force of law to be brought down on anyone involved in this kind of activity. And so the fellow at the slaughterhouse, he's saying, look, I slaughter horses. I sell it as horse meat. Now, what these people do with it after they get it, you know, that's on them. But here, when we ship it out as 100% horse, it's 100% horse. And you can take that to the bank. All right. Now, that brings up another email from the mailbag. I've got an email from Germany. Where is it here? Here it is. So this is from Sam in Germany, and I'm not sure if Sam is German, but I'm going to choose to do this in a German accent just because I like to do that sort of thing. Doug, this is Sam from Germany. I just thought you should know that you're not really doing much to broaden your fan base here by trying to shock us with these horse meat stories. Doug, maybe you should just get over it. Eating horse meat won't hurt you, especially if it's been butchered properly. Most Germans spread raw ground-up horse meat on their toast every morning. But if you really still feel the need to do another story about horse lasagna, here's one from my local paper. Sincerely, Sam.
Yeah, I think that was the, Sam sent me the article about, well, I don't know if it was that article or if it was another article. They're freaked out in Germany. And I do agree that you shouldn't sell horse meat as beef. If you're going to sell a horse meat, just sell it as horse meat. I might pick some up for I found out that my extremely attractive audio engineer is eating it, so I'm not so afraid of it. All right, so that's one more from the mailbag there. They eat whale in Japan? Is that right? They eat just the fatty part, or is there meat involved? Have you eaten whale?
I think so.
Don't you think that's cruel to kill those magnificent beasts?
Hey, my dad ate a dolphin.
He ate a dolphin?
Yeah.
Wow. Don't let that get out. All right. Another one on the horse meat vein. This is from Russ, a loyal listener. He says, Doug, I was on a 10-day hike over a mountain range when I was a Boy Scout. And we were about out of food on the very last day, and I was starving when one guy pulled out a can of dog food. Ingredients? Horse meat, of course. Doug, it was one of the best meals I've ever eaten, says Russ.
Hunger is the best spice.
Hunger is the best spice. It can make horse meat taste like a fillet. All right, now, let's see here. We have to continue with the news. I have too much fun with the mailbag. All right, so this story, this is reason 667 not to allow your children to attend government schools. And now this isn't a very scientific numbering program that I have for these reasons. I'm just assuming that we've already passed reason 666, okay? So reason 667 from WorldNet Daily. A new official interpretation of state law released by Massachusetts Commissioner of Education requires schools to permit transgendered boys to use the girls' bathroom, locker rooms, and changing facilities if the boys assert that they're really girls. I know. And you're thinking, assert? Okay. What does that mean? Well, here's what a document released by this deviant Commissioner of Education there in Massachusetts says, quote, some students may feel uncomfortable with a transgender student using the same-sex segregated restroom, locker room, or changing facility, but this discomfort is not a reason to deny access to the transgendered student. Furthermore, as if we needed a furthermore here, furthermore, the policy document explains neither a doctor's note, nor hormone therapy, nor even parental permission is needed for a student to switch sexes. If a boy says he's a girl, as far as the school is concerned, he should be considered a girl. It actually says, as far as the school should be concerned, he's a girl. I mean, how do you write that with a straight face? He's a girl. Isn't there an obvious disconnect there? Apparently not in the mind of this bureaucrat. The statement says the responsibility for determining a student's gender identity rests with the student. A school should accept a student's assertion of his or her gender identity when there is evidence that the gender-related identity is sincerely held as a part of a person's core identity. And if you think it might help you score with the student. Oh, I'm sorry, I added that part. I apologize. The document warns that referring to transgendered students by their birth name or sex should not be tolerated and can be grounds for discipline. So if a boy says he's a girl and you call him a boy, you could be in trouble. By golly. The document creates policy related to a law that went into effect last year. Okay, the law is called an act relative to gender identity. Okay, the only act that should be relative to gender identity is a swift slap across the face of anyone who's confused about their gender. This act was made and signed and codified to establish that no person shall be excluded from or discriminated against in admission to a public school of any town or in obtaining the advantages, privileges, and courses of study of such public school on account of gender identity. He's a girl. Why don't you grow up? he's a long-haired hair guy, hair metal guy from the 80s, and he knows what it takes to be a man. It doesn't take all that much just from a strictly biological standpoint. Oh, he had long hair when they first started. He cut his hair after that disgusting Unplugged album they did. All those hippie songs. Anyway, I mean, even a guy in the 80s who wore eye makeup, he knew what it took. I mean, just because they wore eye makeup, they didn't expect you to say he's a girl, okay? Just in time for Valentine's Day, ladies and gentlemen, this is from the Science Really file. Just in time for Valentine's Day, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control released data revealing that 20 million new sexually transmitted infections, or STIs, they've changed it now. It was VD. And then it went to STD. Now it's STI. Because there's so many of them now, it's kind of hard to isolate them all into their own categories. We just call them STIs. 20 million new ones are diagnosed each year nationwide. Here's what was shocking to me. Half of the 20 million new infections affect people age 15 to 24, and they only make up a quarter of the population. And they're getting half the VD, for crying out loud. A tribute to the government schools and their effective brainwashing of children to act like animals. HPV, the ever popular human papillomavirus, tops the list as the most common infection, followed by chlamydia, gonorrhea, syphilis, herpes, hepatitis B, HIV, and trichomona. I can't even pronounce this one. A cast of thousands. One CDC researcher has declared that the U.S. is now facing an ongoing severe VD epidemic. Well, no kidding, for crying out loud. I can't even pronounce the name of some of these things. So the kids, little children, 15-year-olds, 15 to 24-year-old kids, are getting half the new cases of VD. And this was released on Valentine's Day. It's a Science Really file because I'm sure it's accurate. All right. Now, speaking of infectious diseases, former Senator Scott Brown has joined Fox News. If you needed any other clue, ladies and gentlemen, if you needed any further evidence that Fox News is just 2 degrees from CNN, former Senator Scott Brown has signed on as a contributor at Fox News. This is from Newsmax. The Republican who lost his seat will contribute throughout Fox's programming schedule. And, he lost his seat, so he should fit right in with Karl Rove, who lost the whole election. He lost the country. Him and Scott should get along famously. he'll be joined on Fox News. By the way, they've kicked off Sarah Palin and Dick Morris. But he'll have other liberals to hang out with, like Karl Rove and Ohio Representative Dennis Kucinich. He's also joined Fox News just for good measure. Now, from Fox, we'll take that 2-degree turn over to CNN. And this is from Breitbart, and it's a commentary about a panel that was discussing the killing spree by the former LAPD officer out there that I'm sure you're all familiar with. So the panelists, listen to how, here's how Breitbart introduces the panelists. Jack Moore, editor of BuzzFeed Sports, Lauren Ashburn, editor-in-chief at the Daily Download, Mark Lamont Hill, and Brooke Baldwin, CNN anchors, and MC Light were on the panel. So what's the deal? MC Light needs no introduction? Are we all supposed to know who MC Light is? I don't know who MC Light is. And I would have appreciated Breitbart as to cluing me in. Anyway, they were all on a panel to talk about the social media support for the quadruple killer who was taken out at Big Bear this past week. The panel concluded, all but one person on the panel, and it was not MC Light, concluded that the killer, cop killer, had a point, and that the unfolding story was quite theatric. Yeah. Mark Lamont Hill, CNN anchor, said that the saga was exciting. It was like Django Unchained in real life. And he said the cop killer was similar to a superhero. And then he was joined by, who was this other person? The editor of BuzzFeed Sports, Jack Moore. He said that the story was like watching a Denzel Washington movie. MC Light concluded that because children were being killed by police brutality, this event brought about a conversation that should occur. Another panelist, who was it here? I get these people confused because I don't know who any of these people are. Brooke Baldwin, a CNN personality. She agreed and she said, I'm glad we had this conversation. Anyway, so it's like Django Unchained. And then apparently there were protesters in front of the LAPD over the weekend. They were protesting in support of the cop killer. They said that they didn't support his deadly methods, but they objected to police corruption and brutality, and they believed that Dorner's claims of racism and unfair treatment by the department were, in essence, true. One of the protesters out there, dressed up probably like Django, he held a sign with a flaming tombstone and an inscription that read, R.I.P. Habeas Corpus. The protester said, the LAPD and Riverside Police were the judge, the jury, and the executioner. As an American citizen, you have the right to a trial and due process by law. Unquote. That's quoting one of the protesters. I hope someone reminded the protesters that it was kind of hard to take the guy into court because he was shooting everyone who tried to capture him. That makes it very difficult to give someone due process. And in my opinion, this cop killer indeed got due process. It was just expedited. Yes, expedited. By the way, the cop killer died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head, further depriving himself of his right to habeas corpus and due process of law. Apparently, this cop killer has inspired a burgeoning subculture of followers. This is according to the AP. They see him as an outlaw hero who raged against powerful forces of authority. And some of the protesters even question whether or not he really died. Yeah. So he's become famous, infamous even. And with the social media being what it is and the internet being what it is, you can be sure that there will be an ongoing subculture who are fascinated with this particular guy. And no doubt it's just a matter of time before something like this happens again. Because the bottom line is, the police departments of America are filled with products of the government schools who believe they evolved from nothing and that they will return to nothing and that they're not responsible to the ultimate authority of a creator God and that there is no judgment day and they're all just animals. So if somebody makes you mad, you can just start shooting and killing them. So look for more of this, ladies and gentlemen. More to follow. All right. Now, from the science, really, file, from San Francisco, CBS reports that on the heels of a close flyby of an asteroid 17,000 miles from the Earth last Friday morning and a devastating meteor that landed in Russia, Bay Area stargazers caught a glimpse of another meteor on Friday night. Sightings were reported throughout the Bay Area, and there's even one dash cam video confirming that it wasn't just a bunch of people whacked out on drugs in San Francisco, which could be the case. Mass hallucination. If there was ever a city where mass hallucination could occur, it would be San Francisco. But no, there was a dash cam that captured this meteor out there in San Francisco. Now, an astronomer with the Cabot Space and Science Center in Oakland said it appears that the three astronomical events seen on Friday are unrelated. Unrelated, he says. Well, that's a pretty presumptuous statement to make. You got three astronomical events that happen in one day, and this guy says, well, they appear to be unrelated. Well, creationists would disagree with this astronomer because there's a number of us who subscribe to the theory that all of the meteorites and the comets and everything that's flying around out there or a good deal of it. Well, it all came from the earth. So they're all actually related, which is why this ended up in the science, really, file. Because I would guess that they are all related. When the fountains of the great deep were broken open and water spewed out from the depths of the earth, it shot rocks and ice and everything else out there into space. And now it's all flying around out there. And apparently about 1,000 tons of it falls to the earth every year. I'm sorry, 15,000 tons. That's 1,000 tons a day or more. I mean, you're lucky one of these hasn't fallen on your car already. Anyway, I think they are related, so I would take issue with this particular astronomer. All right. Did you want to go to a break? You did? Is this an appropriate time for a break? Not really. Should I continue? I could do this one more from the mailbag. Should we grab one from the mailbag? Now, this is from Fred. Now, Fred, let's see here. What do we have here from Fred? He says he's from Jamaica. He was born in Haiti, but he now lives in Canada. This tells me that this needs to be read in a Jamaican accent, even though I'm not sure that Fred speaks with a Jamaican accent. He says, "Hey, Doug, my brother, I love your program, and I have withdrawal symptoms whenever it isn't on for any week. Thanks for all you do, and I pray for your family. I love your audio engineer. Her laugh is mostly all we hear, but that's also a great part of your show. Thank her for me, man." Now, Doug, Sammy Davis Jr. was my favorite, so you know I find your mimicry quite a hoot. And I do it a bit myself, man. Yes, I am black, but I have no love for most politicians, and even less for the current president, who I call Bomzilla. Keep the flame bright, my brother. Regards to you and your family and your extremely attractive audio engineer, and of course to Bob Inyard, and blessings to you, my brother. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Weekly Worldview. Having a bit of a conversation with my extremely attractive audio engineer regarding programming. Apparently, I went a little long in that last segment, and that bumper was meant for the San Francisco meteorite story, but I just kept going on and on. So we've come up with a signal here. When she wants to break in, she's going to stick me in the ribs with a sharpened stick, and I'm going to listen and pay attention to what's going on instead of droning on and on as if I have something interesting to say. All right. So you've heard the Bible verse, right, if you're familiar with the Bible, that in the end times they'll say, peace, peace, but there is no peace, and sudden destruction will come upon them. And I couldn't help but think of that verse when I read the headline from this story up there on the Drudge Report. It had a picture of the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, and underneath him, and he's waving his right hand in a semi-Hitlerian Sieg Heil type thing. And And underneath it just said peace. And I thought, you know, Drudge is pretty good at writing headlines. And he's pretty good at picking a story and putting it up there and, you know, pretty good job. That's probably why he gets 19 billion hits a year. This is a pretty good job. But the Iran supreme leader, and this is according to ABC News, and we have not double or triple sourced the story, and we know that ABC is not necessarily the most reliable news source, but we're going to go with it because it has the flavor of truth to it. Iran's supreme leader said on Saturday that his country was not seeking nuclear weapons, but that if they intended to build them, the U.S. could not stop them. Yeah. So it's like O.J. with his book, If I Did It. The Iranian leader says, no, we're not looking for nuclear. We're not seeking nuclear weapons. But if we did, here's how we would do it, and you couldn't stop us. Very similar. He may come out with a book after the first detonation, you know, if we did it. So he says, peace, peace, but sudden destruction is awaiting us, ladies and gentlemen, because we've lost our nerve in the face of Iran, and I'm not sure why we have, but we have. And we've allowed them to continue down this path. But thankfully, the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei says, peace, peace. Iran... officials there recently have highlighted a religious decree that Ayatollah Ali Khamenei issued more than 7 years ago banning nuclear weapons. Did you know that? That Ali Khamenei, who is God's deputy on earth, Allah's deputy on earth, and somewhat infallible from what I understand, at least in the psychotic mindset of the average Muslim on the street, at least in Iran, He put out a fatwa, back in 2005. They claim that's a binding declaration that bans nuclear weapons, and that proves that Iran could not be seeking nuclear weapons because this fatwa banned all that. And they just want to build oncology centers with, you know, nuclear medicine and all that. That's, yeah. In the meantime... Iranian officials have announced that they've begun installing a new generation of centrifuges so that they can more rapidly build up their nuclear medicine departments at their local hospitals and start curing cancer there in Iran. They need to do it more quickly, obviously. Cancer's a serious thing. And they want to be able to make as much highly enriched radioactive material as possible so that they can begin treating children, women, and minorities who may be diseased. What else does Khamenei have to say besides peace? He says sanctions hurt the people of Iran, but there are two options. One is to surrender and repent in the face of the bullying powers, like a weak nation. The other is to activate domestic resources and capabilities like a brave nation and triumphantly pass the danger zone. I'm not sure what he means by danger zone. If this is all peaceful, I guess he means the danger zone of our sanctions, starving the poor women and children there of Iran, which I happen to agree that the sanctions, they do affect the people and not necessarily the nuclear program there in Iran. And so hence I'm not for sanctions. I'm for bombing immediately, if not sooner. So we should triumphantly pass the danger zone. That's the second option. He says Iran has chosen the second option. They're taking the highway to the danger zone there, just like they said back in that movie from the 80s. Highway to the danger zone, ladies and gentlemen. All right, now, finally, is that it? Is that all the news I have? You know, I probably threw away 90% of the news that I read this week because it was just distasteful, and I try to limit my reporting on things that make my extremely attractive audio engineer uncomfortable. You know, like the perverts and the deviants. I mean, if I wanted to, I could sit here and do 3 hours a day just on them, but then she would leave me. So she would no longer participate. So I have to throw out a lot of news, and so here we are at the end of the broadcast, and I want to close with this story, ladies and gentlemen, because I have often asserted, I know there's many people in my audience, you're all for the free market, And I am. I'm a free market guy. I believe in free markets. But I believe that the only reason the free market works and is beneficial to society, or the only way, I should say, the only way the free market works and is beneficial to everyone in society, be it those who work for a living and those who employ people, those who sell things and those who buy things, it works best when people participating in the free market are restrained by Jesus Christ and the Holy Spirit and Christian morals and ethics. Because without these things, the free market is dangerous. And ultimately, somebody will end up enslaved, somebody will end up killed, someone will end up ripped off, and there will be thieves and killers who run the free market. Now, what brings this to mind? I don't mean to give you a diatribe, because I believe in liberty. I believe in Christian liberty, which is doing whatever you want to do under the guidance of the Holy Spirit. I think that's healthy. And without it, the free market is just another means by which people will hurt and destroy one another. And let's go to Las Vegas. This is from CNN. John Allman has passed away at the age of 52 from a heart attack. And he was a nighttime construction security guard. And he was such a fixture at the Heart Attack Grill, the downtown Las Vegas restaurant, that he stood on the sidewalk and encouraged people to come in. He was the unofficial mascot, apparently, of the Heart Attack Grill down in Las Vegas. He became known as its unofficial spokesman. Allman suffered a heart attack while waiting for a bus in front of the Heart Attack Grill restaurant there in Las Vegas. Now, you'll remember, ladies and gentlemen, the restaurant's previous 575-pound spokesman, one Blair River, died at the age of 29 of a heart attack. And according to this report, another patron suffered a heart attack while eating a triple bypass burger. I mean, yes, it's ironic, and it could be taken as amusing if it wasn't so troublesome. Because, well, people are dying at this place, and it's called the Heart Attack. Another reason that I don't like the Heart Attack Grill, and I know that a lot of my conservative talking heads there, the Limbots, you know, the Limbots, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, and their ilk, they all love the Heart Attack Grill. They're for freedom in the free market. We're all for the free market. Everybody should be free. At the Heart Attack Grill, scantily clad female servers dressed as nurses take orders as prescriptions. And a house policy allows diners weighing over 350 pounds to eat for free. Anyway. The owner of the restaurant says he has no plans to alter the grill's menu or the scantily clad sluts who operate taking orders. But they do plan to remain closed on the day of the latest victim's funeral. Yeah, tip of the hat to the poor slob who died of a heart attack in front of the Heart Attack Grill. Anyway, so I guess that's all I've got. I guess there's no big moral point except what I said before, and well, that's pretty much it, right? That's the show for today, ladies and gentlemen. I want to thank you all for being here. I want to thank my friends at KGOV.com, where you'll be able to catch me this week. I don't know what day, but you got to listen every day at 670 KLTT on the radio dial or KGOV.com. I'll be sitting in with Bob Inyard at some point this week. So do tune in for that. I want to thank my friends at American Right to Life, at Personhood USA, at Theology Online, and of course, to my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here at the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, I will be back next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.